Hey everybody, welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, a show that takes the most complicated challenges we face and leaves you with solutions to make your day better. Today, we're going to talk with Jeremy Phillips and Daniel Kirk about what Jesus might do, or what would Jesus do, about the state of Christianity in the United States related to rights, economic opportunity, things like that. So we're really excited to have them here. Jeremy is an instructor of religion and humanities at Haywood Community College, and a humanities instructor at UNC Asheville. He has a Master of Divinity in Theology in Biblical Studies. And Daniel Kirk is a New Testament scholar with a PhD from Duke. He's an award-winning author. His books include A Man Attested by God, The Human Jesus of the Synoptic Gospels, and Jesus, Have I Loved You? His most recent book, Romans for Normal People, was published this fall. And welcome you guys, and I'll just let you guys figure out who's going to go first, Daniel or Jeremy. Just a little bit more about what you guys are about and what you're doing.
All right. Thanks, Eric. It's nice to be talking with you again. I'm here at the end of my semester. That's kind of where I'm at right now, switching into the Christmas season with family and all of that. And interested, obviously, in the state of religion in the United States, and have been following this for many years, both personally and academically, and so interested to see where our conversation goes today.
I'm actually currently a full-time student in a physician assistant program. So I don't live in these religious spaces a ton, except that as I interact with the world and see so much that happens in the political scene, you know, I live in Texas. The question of the interaction between what people think about Jesus and what that means for what we're pursuing in our common life together, I feel like it's a live one. It's a live one for me, and I feel like it's a live one for our society. And I think it's really important that we come up with some good ways of thinking about how naming and following Jesus can overflow for the good of the many.
You know, we kicked off with Too Much Wine, covered by Phoebe Bridgers, and you guys suggested that. And it seems like, you know, you could almost say Americans are a little drunk and keep thinking of our glass of our soul is going to be filled by material possessions. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'll jump in because I was the one who suggested that song as the first song that came to mind thinking about Christmas. And I think I like that song. It's been a song that's been with me for a long time. It's a handsome family song done by Andrew Bird later. And then Phoebe Bridgers does this new version of it. It's interesting to me how most Christmas songs are songs that are jolly and cheerful, and you know, we sing Jingle Bells and Santa Claus and all these songs about religious songs, Jesus songs about Jesus coming as a, you know, the savior of the world as a baby, and these ideas, and there's cheer and joy in that and all this. But the reality for most people, I think, with Christmas is more like this song. It's Christmas Day, someone's getting their clothes thrown out in the snow after a drunken fight with their partner, and you know, they leave in the middle of the night. And then they have this kind of revelatory moment out staring up at the sky, and you know, imagine their lover's face and their eyes again. And then they go back and, you know, find them drunk on the floor and trying to pick up the pieces. And there's this, the line of, if there's anything kind of transcendent about the song, it's maybe that moment of seeing the face, or seeing the eyes. And also the line of butterfly, I think, is interesting. You know, the butterfly is almost a Christian image, right? In some popular songs, the transformation from the, you know, the caterpillar to the butterfly. And so they're singing to the transformed person, and yet they're still drunk and they got blood on their teeth and they're falling apart. And I think that's Christmas for a lot of people. Is it's a tough time of year. People are forced to be with either alone when they want to be with family, or they're with family that they have a hard time with, or, you know, Christmas for, I think for a lot of people is difficult. And it's the, and Jesus is like the farthest thing from Christmas for most people. And that's in that song too. You know, there's no religious sentiment at all in the song. It's kind of about the experience of Christmas more. And maybe that's where we're at a bit in our culture. We experience Christmas without Jesus. He's kind of like lost in the mix.
And things aren't made better, right? I mean, I think that's the yeah. Tension. It's like there is so much hope and nostalgia and story about how this, the most wonderful time of the year, and the dawning of perfection and hope and salvation. And it's, I think it's that contrast with the up against the stark realities of relationships that are tense or non-existent or abusive or just normal. Yeah. And that lack of salvation and newness can really cast its own shadow.
You're making me think of the word hope, and we've lost it. You know, Jesus in the birth. The birth is a new beginning, and it's about hope. You could even throw in the new year there and say it's all about the future. Would you say that we've lost that? And if we have lost it, what has it been replaced by?
Hope's a rare commodity in our culture these days, I think. I mean, I spend a lot of time with students and young people, and I think hope is a bit fleeting. You know, the world is pretty messed up right now in so many ways. And with all of the social problems and wars and famines and climate change, and things are really challenging. And it's really hard to see things looking better right now, I think, for a lot of people. Daniel, yeah. What do you think about hope?
I guess I was thinking about it, you know, in terms of the students that I hang out with, because most of my classmates are in their 20s. And I think that I get a sense of hope in part because they keep their noses down and they're preparing for, you know, a career for which there's a good market and decent pay. And there's this much more focused idea of, well, my hope is for this life that I can still build, where I'll have a decent income and be able to give my kids a good life. And, you know, that kind of American dream thing is probably still where they are. And there's maybe frustrations around the edges about some things, you know, like we're in a medical field and the fact that you can't get an abortion in Texas without everybody who helped you going to jail is, you know, that's a concern. But I feel like in my world, it's interesting that they don't seem to be asking a lot of the big existential sort of questions by and large as a group, I would say.
If there was a foundation in Christianity, or there is, around Jesus and that spirit of life and positivity and hope and giving, we live in a society today that really is about getting a job and some of the negative things we're feeling about, you know, like I think you mentioned abortion or getting a job. So what is Christmas? Like what are we celebrating? Tell me what this season's about right now.
For me, it's all about spending time with family. I think that's in a way what it's become. It's just another place to, and a treasured one, to be able to get together with people that I don't really see very often and spend time together. And maybe the only Christmassy thing we really do is gift giving. We get a tree, we do some of these cultural things for sure. But in my household, we have a mixed kind of religious, non-religious household. We don't really do much Jesus stuff at all. Like it's not something we talk about, or the Christmas spirit, the Christmas story even. It's just not really there in my household. And I would imagine it's that way for a lot of American households.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Daniel, you might have a different situation at your place.
I don't know. It's not entirely dissimilar. I guess I was thinking about it, the question, more in terms of the framing of, you know, what would I try to tell Jesus, you know, in terms of what's happening. And I do think that there is a sense in which there is a little bit of space created in this time between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, the kind of the Advent season, where it's possible to talk about love, joy, and peace in a way that maybe a little bit more socially acceptable and more broadly socially acceptable. And it doesn't sound as awkward or schmarmy or weird or naive for this season. You know, I think so much of what granted, at the same time, we're out buying a bunch of stuff and just, you know, confirming that the dominant narrative is market capitalism. But what we are also hearing songs that talk about joy and that talk about peace. And for, you know, I think a world that, you know, society that really does seem to go kind of minute to minute happy experiences, a society that is largely built on our militaristic, you know, ability to go out and smash anybody who maybe, you know, stumbles across our interests or whatever, you know, these ways that we typically express our identity and in power and consumption. I feel like there's a little bit of space created to hope to hope for something different. Although, yeah, I think the question of how deeply that hits and resonates, and whether it's a strong enough narrative to call us off what we are normally doing 330 days a year is, you know, that's a big question.
I think the question of Jesus in particular, as soon as you get more religious with it, it's increasingly polarizing in our culture. I think non-Christians are becoming more non-Christian, and maybe some Christians are becoming, you know, more Christian or more at least stronger in an identity as being a Christian or an evangelical or, you know, of something. And those things seem to be, like everything in our society, being pushed more to the extremes. Jesus seems pretty absent from Christmas for a reason, I think.
We have Jesus and this holiday around Christmas, but yet it's really about family. We use the holidays as a time for togetherness, and we kind of put some of the world's problems behind us. And they're significant. And we kind of replace the notion of Jesus as we become more a secular society with, you know, kind of a personal definition of a time off from some of the world's troubles. We just heard mountain goats. Daniel, you picked that one out. What's your kind of, what was behind that?
It goes back to some ways in which we are a polarized people around questions of religion and especially Christianity right now. The title of that song is 1 Samuel 15:23. It's a Bible verse. And the first half of the verse reads like this: "Rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance is like the wickedness of idolatry." So what I love about what's happening in that song is, on the one hand, you have this condemnation of divination and witchcraft, and it's just held up like as an assumption that if someone is involved in that's what it looks like to be in rebellion against God. But then the song is from the voice of someone who is a diviner, a witch maybe, and they're healing people. They're clothing the naked. The sick are coming to them. There's this one part where the line is, "My house will be for all people who have no place to go," which is this echo of this Bible verse, "My house will be a prayer, a house of prayer for all people," that Jesus himself quotes. So the thing that's happening in the song is that you have this person who is embodying all of the stuff that you would hope a faithful, you know, follower of Jesus, or, you know, someone who's embodying the life of a loving divinity would be doing, but it's within a context that a kind of a religious purity movement would say is worthy of condemnation. And I think that that is actually a great metaphor and entry point for thinking about some of the tensions that we're living in right now, where there is a very strong conservative political voice that is insisting that its way is what following Jesus looks like. And I think with that, there's very loud condemnations of other spaces and pockets of society that are said to be damaging, that are said to be, you know, seedbeds of wickedness, dangerous for our children or whatever. But then once you go get to know those people, you find out that they're really loving and caring for each other and, you know, striving to make the world a better place, and things that, you know, by healing and clothing and other things, you'd think, hey, that looks a lot like Jesus. And so I think that's kind of some of the on the ground, like what's the significance of Jesus and what might that look like? To think through at Christmas time, I think some of it might be being willing to be surprised by where something that looks like a loving God might be springing up, something that looks like Jesus might be intact, even in a place where the name of Jesus isn't affixed to it.
There's an inverse in some of the teachings of Jesus. One is more exclusion, focuses on exclusion, and maybe has a little bit more of judgment of the way that things ought to be. And the other side could be viewed as more open, you know, open to other people, open to other ideas. Does one or the other seem more Christian to you?
I mean, one of the realities of the New Testament is that you kind of have different versions of Jesus in the New Testament itself. And people are always making versions of Jesus culturally. You know, this has been happening since the beginning. And so we always kind of make Jesus, I think, in our own image in some ways. But there are these parts of the New Testament, in the Gospels especially, where the Jesus that's presented is one who is more like that crystal healer, right? That in the song, the Jesus, he welcomes children, he gives priority to women, he heals the sick, he touches lepers, he fed multitudes of people, he challenges wealth and the powerful. And at the end of the day, in Christian theology, he's about giving his life for others, right? That's the kind of the centerpiece of Christian theology, is giving your life away that others can live. And that other kind of version of Jesus might be a version in like the book of Revelation, which, by the way, was something that was kind of a later, maybe addition to the Bible, a bit controversial in how Revelation came in the, you know, one in the like 200-300s and stuff. But this version of the Revelation Jesus is, you know, Jesus coming on the white horse, and he's got a tongue, which is a giant sword, and he's slaying the nations. And, you know, he's the Jesus of judgment. It's super macho. He's got a tattoo on his leg in that picture and stuff. Says King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Yeah. It seems like that macho Jesus has kind of taken over the kind of more conservative wing of power that of evangelicalism that has allied itself with power, has kind of given in to a character like Donald Trump and his idiosyncrasies, let's say, and immoralities, you know, tied their wagon to his horse for power. And it seems so opposite the message that was there in like the Gospels of, you know, the challenge to power and really asking people to give up their wealth and their position and power and serve others. So there is tension there. And it definitely seems like that welcoming Jesus, who was trying to create a new community, was up for those who were the under-affiliated, which is what the name of the show, right?
nice.
that's what he was doing. If you were asking what Jesus would be like, you know, what would Jesus do now? I think he would be unrecognized, really. If like the Jesus who was, you know, presented in like the Gospels, if he showed up, he might be, you know, hanging out with all the wrong people. He'd be hanging out with immigrants, people who are struggling. He might be comforting, you know, women who had been separated from their children at the border zones. He'd be hanging out with the poor, homeless people, addicts, sex workers, right? And he'd be doing all these things to make them feel loved, accepted, motivated to live their lives in different ways, potentially to be more like him, maybe, and giving of themselves for others. You know, most contemporary evangelical Christians who are wrapped up in this power game probably wouldn't have much to do with a character like that person if he showed up.
Jeremy, you touched on something that I think is really important, is Jesus wouldn't be recognized today. How can we celebrate at the holidays someone who's unrecognizable? And what are we really celebrating then? I mean, is this a charade?
The fact that he would not be recognized, and I think that's different from saying that, you know, we don't, you know, Jeremy named a whole bunch of things that this unrecognizable figure would probably be doing. We probably wouldn't hear about him. He'd probably just be a figure of controversy among the religious leaders of whatever area he was working in and trying to serve people. So Jeremy talked about how, you know, the culmination of the Jesus life in these stories is about, you know, Jesus giving his life for others. And, you know, as the narrative of Jesus' birth got more and more developed in the first century, and you see this in the New Testament, you know, the idea took root that, you know, Jesus existed before he even came to earth. So there's this idea that his self-giving begins with his incarnation, with his birth. So, you know, I think this general idea that what it looks like to be part of a Jesus story is to give up, to lay down your own life in some little way so that someone else might live, so that someone else might find life. You know, I think that there's a million ways to think about how that narrative could play out and how it might transform our normal narratives, which are I'm gonna get as much stuff for myself as I can, even if it hurts this other person a little bit. I think there's small things that you could do. Like, you know, a lot of people are getting their stocking stuffers and putting candy bars in there. Like, well, what if you just decided it was important that the chocolate you bought wasn't made with slave labor. Like, just, it's a small thing. There's ways to do this. You can look for the free trade, fair trade symbol, although that's got its own issues. There's ethically made chocolate. It's a small thing, but it's a way to say me getting a cheap thing that I like is not more important than the dignity of the brown person on the other side of the world who's putting their labor in to get me this thing. So I think finding out about our consumption and what it actually costs, whether it's slave labor for bananas or clothing or chocolate or tea or whatever. Again, in some ways, what it's saying is me getting as much stuff as I can isn't the bottom line. And that's a little way to say, you know, I'm willing to give a little something so that somebody, even if I haven't seen them, can have a little more life. That is an example, because Christmas tends to be so much about consuming. Like, you need to ask, how can I transform my consumption along the lines of the story of Jesus?
Might add animals to that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then start thinking about the planet. You know, this is one of the reasons I think that Christianity has not been more helpful in America. And, you know, it's funny when we talk about being more post-Christian or not having as Christian influence, but there's still a whole lot of Christian influence, and you need to be able to connect with the Christian story to get elected to office. But one reason I think it hasn't been more helpful as a society is because the dominant narrative in America since the time of the revivals has really been individualistic. Like, you know, it's about my personal salvation, me, you know, getting to heaven when I die, kind of a story. So what's left behind is a more rich story that you find in throughout the Bible and the Christian tradition of God being committed to the whole earth and the renewal of the earth. And that, you know, the earth is created good, and God's purpose is to renew the earth and humanity on it. And once you study that, then you've got, okay, so what it means to think about the faithfully embodying Jesus is it has to do with nature. It has to do with systems of power. It has to do with our relationships with each other. It has to do with making sure that everyone can be fed from this earth. Everyone can be clothed from what we get from this earth, that bodies are whole and people are healed. So I think figuring out how to tell a bigger Jesus story is actually one really important aspect of us as a society overcoming some of the biggest challenges that we're facing right now.
Do you feel like this idea, it's really jumbled? Because on one hand, I think you have people rejecting Christianity and would say a lot of the things you're saying, which is just do good works, and that will be more like Jesus, and they reject the Christian church. And then a lot of Christianity is doubling down on this spirit of individualism and saying, you know what? People can become whoever they want to be. And that is in Jesus's image. Again, I go back to it's almost like this inverse conversation that's complicating things, which is Christianity, religion, big, individualistic, versus this giving back on an individual level is more like what Jesus might do. And it's hard to get back to the spirit of Jesus at Christmas time because of all the messages that sometimes people get from Christianity. Is that a fair characterization of one of our challenges?
Sounds like a nice description to me. Yeah.
Let's get into a little bit of the what we can recommend folks do to feel good about this.
Yeah, one thing that strikes me is, you know, in talking about the kind of this selflessness and doing things for others is, and this shows in life for people, that when you live that way, you tend to have better relationships. You tend to have more hope in social life. You tend to be happier. That there's a good way to live that is good for you, right? It's good for you to give. It's good for you to be kind to people. It's good for you to love people who don't deserve it. And that's something that is sort of maybe needs to be said, you know, that even if you're not into the Jesus story, there is a model of life in the Jesus story, which is rooted in that, and that does lead to a richer kind of life for you and for others. And that's that kind of self-giving love that's at the heart of that story.
That's, yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said, Jeremy. Thank you for that. The one thing that comes to mind for me is to, you know, as humans, I think it's really easy to, it's a lot easier and it's been more important in our evolution to demarcate what separates us from other people, right? This is just part of how we tell stories. Like, this is what makes us us. This is what makes you you. I need to know that so that, you know, I know who my safe people are, who are my tribe are, so that, you know, I can survive and pass my genes on to the other people. And I need to know that you're the bad guy so that, you know, I can kill you and, you know, preserve my genes or whatever. I think that there's something to be said for doing the hard work of finding the ways that what people who might be our political others, or, you know, the people that we, or religious others, or folks that we have the most conflict with over Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving, you know, drunk Uncle Bob or whoever. I think it's important to work on finding those ways that we do want the same things, and to be able to try to speak each other's language, because I think that as much as the particular things that where we want different outcomes separate us, I think that wanting to be different is as, and insisting on those differences is as toxic as anything else in our society right now. That just the tribalism itself isn't serving us well. And this is something that I think is very Jesus-like. And the New Testament is just full of stories of people discovering that their old tribalism has to break down if they want to be a faithful follower of Jesus. And so that is another place where I think that we could start to find some hope if we didn't see so many enemies and discovered more people that were just people like us who were trying to find that love, trying to find that peace, trying to find that joy.
Do you feel like sometimes we're looking for enemies, that we're looking for a fight? I mean, do you feel like people are naturally looking for these differences and that keeps us from being a good person?
It resonates for me, for sure. Maybe I spend too much time on Twitter, but yeah.
Especially now.
I do think there's something natural about it. I do. And I think that it takes a lot of work. For instance, just to take an example, because we're talking about religious things, there is interfaith conversation. And if you go to one of these, there'll be about 30 people there. And then meanwhile, you know, there'll be, you know, hundreds and thousands of people at their own religious gatherings, right? There's some things about how we think about right and wrong, how we do our decision making. A lot of it's instinctual. I'm thinking a lot of right now, the work of Jonathan Haidt is in my mind. He has a book called The Righteous Mind that talks about, you know, how we make decisions and how we think about what's right and wrong. What our tribe says is right and wrong is what we think of is right and wrong. And that's part of why we end up separating ourselves. Sorry, there's just this massive flash of light. It's gotten really dark here, and there's this massive flash of light.
Well, you're talking about a big subject.
I know, right? Apparently, I'm saying all the wrong things.
It hasn't happened yet. You're okay. This is a nice conversation. I think Jesus would be okay with this one.
Yeah, maybe that's a lightning of support. It's fire. So, you know, you went right to negative. And maybe that's one of our challenges, is we focus on the negative.
First thing I think of is giving people dignity, that when you're engaging with everyone in your life this through the season, listening to people, really engaging with them, not being so wrapped up in your own life and story and talking about yourself all the time, and also not caring about what drunk Uncle Bob is doing or whatever, but like really engaging with people and just saying, you know, what's happening with you? You're valuable. You have dignity. You know, so at a very basic level, there's a gift that we can give anybody every day when we interact with other humans. That one's easy in a way. You know, you don't really have to go anywhere or do anything. It's just a shift in your mind. And doing that will lead to richer times with people, might lead to some interesting, maybe even difficult conversations. But if you keep that perspective of dignity, you might get over that initial difficulty towards understanding. And, you know, that's, I think, a reality is that we all have dignity as human beings and value and worth. that's maybe a faith statement right there, but one I believe in. And granting that and encouraging that in each other is an easy way to maybe enter that Christmas spirit, you know, beyond just a giving somebody a trinket.
Yeah, and I would just add that to the way you initially framed the question, I do think that getting outside of yourself matters. There is better benefit for your mental health, spirituality, for the world to engage in the act of service, where just to, in a way that extends, like what Jeremy was talking about giving dignity to another person and serving someone else, or even just things like gratitude practices. You know, whether or not you believe in a particular kind of divinity, these are things that are, you know, there's actual, you know, mental health research that these are things that are in fact long-term transformative. So the ways that our narrative so often tells us, and in some ways it's important, right? Like if people, especially, you know, thinking of like parents, often it's the mom who's just, you know, all day is just like giving of herself, pouring into the kids, you know, keeping the house, whatever, you know, self-care is important. And I do things that are self-care, but kind of in that moment of, you know, asking is, you know, going to the mall versus finding an act of service. I do think that, you know, finding ways to engage in that act of service and give life to another. I do think that there's some inherent value in that, and that's Christmassy as well.
I did want to touch on one thing, because we're going to play Joy to the World, and it's kind of a foundational piece, especially the third verse. So I wonder if before we go into that, you could tell us a little bit about what your thinking is about that third verse.
So the third verse is the one that says, no more let sins and sorrows grow or thorns infest the ground. He comes to make his blessings flow far as the curse is found. That verse for me sums up this idea that we were talking about earlier, where this holistic picture of what Jesus comes to do and what matters to in the Jesus story is everything, far as the curse is found. Anytime there's a broken relationship, you know, the blessing of God would be that relationship being restored. No more let sins and sorrows grow or thorns infest the ground. It's an allusion to the fall story in Genesis, where the idea is that the ground's going to produce thorns and thistles rather than, you know, fruit-bearing trees. So the idea that the environment would be restored and people would be able to eat off of it, and that the earth itself would flourish, and basically in everything from what people usually think about, which is their, you know, kind of the idea of my relationship with God, but then all the way down to our relationship with the dirt and our relationships with each other in between. What I feel like that verse captures is that the Jesus story really is about everything. It's about our social healing, our healed bodies, the healing of the earth. And that's what the Jesus story coming to fruition looks like.
Can I add something there, Daniel?
Thank you.
That's a great explication of that. And just like in it takes work to restore our relationships with other people, it takes a decision. It also takes work to restore the earth. You know, it's not like it just magically happens and God restores everything. It's a participatory thing, just like all the other stuff. So participating in fighting against climate change and restoring the planet for human habitation is a great way to be a Christian.